Make sure you get us loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
That would be awesome. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Used Wigs Radio Podcast 52. Bad news for Team Wigs. Due to the woeful economy, Used Wigs stock price has plummeted, and our board of directors have agreed to sell our company to a large Russian podcast conglomerate. Nothing much will change, though, except our show will only now be playing, discussing, and selling hip-hop ringtones. Oh, and Jeff, Russ, and Todd will be replaced by Russian actors.
Все, я сделал.
Ну давайте, ну ебать копать.
Есть, ну я дай, прочитаю сначала, я ж текст не знаю. А вот эту программу,
эту программу раз, эту программу два.
Ты не в камеру, ты вот сюда смотри.
Да я думаю, как мне руки делать.
Да потом хуйня эти руки, давай, зови в камеру.
Куда галстук, скажи, к тебе или от меня?
Ко мне.
So, boys, our last show together, our last American show.
Let's make it count.
Let's make it count, guys. Yet. Guys, guess what I did today?
What'd you do, Jeff?
I got to visit one of only six giant proton accelerators in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool,
what
huh?
What was the occasion?
The University of Pennsylvania has a giant proton accelerator to fight cancer.
They have it there on site.
They have it on site.
And you've worked there, but you've worked there for a couple of years now, right?
I work at the University of Pennsylvania, and...
did you get some of your protons accelerated?
I stole three protons. I left there. I put them in my pockets. And they're accelerating right now in my pants at a rapid rate.
Right about now, they're noticing that they're missing. Wait a minute. We are three protons
We're
short.
We're three protons short of this thing actually working. How much would you pay for a giant proton accelerator?
I don't know that I have a need. What do you do with it?
Well, what you can do many things with it. Many, like, I believe there was a giant one the size of, like, a football field in CERN.
Yeah, that's the one that could tear a hole in our atmosphere.
Right, and they're looking for, you know, they're using that to look for, like, the meaning of life mm-hmm. and things, kind of esoteric things.
Sounds yeah. like something that they play, like, during the day at game shows. Are your protons slow and lethargic?
Wah, wah, wah.
Well, this is the one, in CERN, I believe it's like Doctor Who would go through it and appear,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
It's a giant tunnel, right?
And yeah. Yeah. But this one, this proton accelerator, and the ones in the United States, the six of them are at the leading, hospitals, and it's proton therapy to hit tumors with a giant proton beam. So right now, when you do radiation and you try to get rid of a tumor, you know, it's pretty exact, but when you have this giant, this thing's the size of like a floor of about a good-sized room of a house, and...
Jeez.
It, you know, spins around these protons, creates this giant laser, and it exactly pinpoints on the human. And you stick a human kind of in another room where this beam comes out of, and it hits the person in the exact spot, and it's supposed to be real specific in zapping
wow.
that tumor.
If you connect it to a photograph of Kelly LeBrock,
that
could it make...
Something weird would happen. something really weird would happen. And
have you seen her recently, by the way?
She's not holding up well.
Haggard.
Yeah.
Haggard. She is terrible. It's really a sin.
Who starred in that movie?
Anthony Michael Hall.
The greatest teen comedic actor of all time. I say it
yeah.
all the time. He was so good in that. And then the other kid in that.
Brother Chet was...
Chet.
What's
Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How about a greasy pork roll sandwich served in an ashtray?
I don't know the other kid. I never saw anything.
That other kid, I did a thing on him on Used Wigs. He actually left the acting biz altogether. Wyatt, I believe his
yes.
name was. He was awesome. He left the acting biz altogether, and he's a history professor at the University of Texas.
He was like a kind of a Ferris Bueller-ish.
Yeah, he was a nebbish.
They couldn't afford Matthew Broderick, so they got...
Right. He was also... He was very similar to the character in Real Genius, like the main character in Real Genius. Kind of like a cipher, a guy who just things happened to him, and you know he wasn't the main, you know.
Far more masculine though than the guy.
Oh yeah,
Real Genius.
Oh, guy in Real Genius is a bit light in the loafers.
Uh-huh.
Very cute though, beautiful eyes. So guys, I got to view this giant proton accelerator, and it's very neat, and it just infused me with the feeling of everything I do when I go into work every day. means so little to what when these people go in to fire up this thing. Like, I was watching, like, this thing, you buy it, and then you hire all these Belgians to come work and live in the United States and run the thing, because it's a $144 million piece of machinery. And their whole job is to get that laser exactly right to zap a tumor and save a life. When I'm off by a pixel, big deal. Fix the style sheet, upload it. When they're off by a pixel, guy dies.
Really?
I don't know. Okay. That's what I'm kind of figuring, don't you think?
Well, any piece of equipment that comes with a flock of Belgians.
Belgians?
Belgians.
Belgish.
Belgish. Belgians.
Belgs.
Belgs. If those Belgians come with their delicious
what
beer.
What are the people
Belgians.
Called? Belgians, yeah.
Belgians. Do they speak Belgian, yeah, Todd?
I thought you said Belgiums.
Belgium. Maybe I did.
That's what you
Belgiums.
Said.
Bring over some Belgiums. Maybe we'll bring some of that beer, the
That's
fruity
my
beer.
Funny accent.
Belgiums.
They use Belgiums.
They use Belgiums to build stuff. Proton accelerators.
Hey, this laser doesn't look quite right. Can you Belgiums come over here and help me with it?
Thank you, Belgiums. Oh, Todd. All right, guys. Why don't we right now play a song? And this song, I love it. It's going to get the show started off right, on the right foot. A little ditty by a band called Little Death. Baby, Can You Dig Your Man? That was Little Death, the song Baby, Can You Dig Your Man? And that's off of a new album of theirs coming out. You can go to myspace.com/lovelittledeath and check that out. They're from London, England, and I dig them for many reasons, but they kind of remind me of a good Pixies vibe. Now, see, Todd, I related them to a band that most people
Many
know.
Many people know.
The Pixies. So
it's an interesting name.
Let's pretend we all don't know what it means because we discussed it earlier.
Little Death is what the French call an orgasm. The Little Death.
And we're going to play a boner sound there?
There you go.
All right.
You know how I know that?
No, I don't.
I know that based on the latest interview Amy Grimm did on the site.
Amy Grimm, new correspondent for Newsweek. She's getting a lot of great interviews, a lot of great bands. Every one of the bands so far, she's interviewed. Very, very good.
Yeah.
And we have a new one coming up that I just started listening to today. I think the band's called 88 out of L.A. Very good. And what was it? Alexandra Scott, the very pretty kind of folky singer.
Wrote the national anthem.
Well, Francis Scott Key. No, I dug her, and I believe you liked her also, Todd. We were sending links back and forth.
Yeah.
You said she was easy on the eyes.
And the ears.
And the ears, yeah. Correct. Uh-huh. Anyway, Amy Grimm told you about Little Death?
Or? No, when she was interviewing the Orion Experience.
Oh, he mentioned it.
Whatever his name is, Orion something, he mentioned
Shimprini?
It. Yeah. He mentioned that somehow.
Well... There you go, kids. Now you know everything you need to know about orgasms, French orgasms. Guys, we started out the show on very happy topics, very nice stuff, but I have to really take it down a notch and talk about something I find utterly repulsive, disgusting, and many people, and it's not meant to be that. It's supposed to be the exact opposite. It's meant to bring great comfort and ease and joy. Do you guys know what cuddle parties are?
Yeah.
No, you do?
You do? Really?
Yeah. I know what that is. It's when people get together.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a dry orgy.
It really
they
is.
They lay on the ground together with their clothing on, and they like pat each other and hug each other and lay on each other. And
they don't necessarily know each other.
Yeah.
You know, there's this whole movement, Russ, of like people need to exchange human contact more. A lot of like new age therapist people are like, you know, world be a better place if everybody just, you know, rubbed on each other in a very appropriate manner. But... The Inquirer just did a piece on cuddle parties.
I'm going to suggest that we do that next.
Well, I say we try it. No, I'm kidding. Of course.
But don't you think that there's something to that?
No, because here's the deal. All these things come down to dirty hippies are involved. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's nice to think I'm going to have a cuddle party with some very highly educated, nice people, good-looking people. You know, the girls are very probably nice and soft to the touch. The guys maybe, you know, work out a bit. So it's kind of fun to touch them.
I don't get how you would instigate that. Like, everybody comes over, hey, Frank, how's it going? Like, hey. Do you blow a whistle and suddenly everybody starts
You're like, could you guys put down your wine and proceed to... Here's...
They play music and you march around in a circle. Like, and then when the music stops, you drop on the ground and cuddle the person.
But if you think about it, like, do you wait till everybody gets there to start?
Right.
Or, like, somebody gets there late and everybody's already in a pile on the floor
like
cuddling?
And you just jump...
They just start cuddling with the host.
And you just...
There's two of you until everybody else gets there and joins in.
And you just jump in like it's a pile of leaves. Hey, friend's here. Hour late, friend. Woo!
Or you just all stand around and finally, somebody puts down their drink. Okay, let's get cuddling.
Well, here's how I picture it going. Like, cuddle, cuddle, poke. Okay, you stop it. Cuddle, cuddle, poke.
Yeah.
What are you poking with? Finger. You sure? All right, time out.
So this is men and women all just in
a they're like people, like, picture, you know, like you go to Milk Boy. And you get like a couple of the weirdo.
I don't think it's a public. I don't think
it's not. But
no,
I'm saying, you know, like
people host them.
No, I'm saying, you know, a couple of the weirdo poetry things where you get those type of people. Picture them being like, hey, I'm having this get together at my house. Hey, maybe you can all come. And you know, we may not know each other, but you know, basically have some wine. Someone bring some dip, and then we'll all just lay on the disgusting rug I have filled with cat hair, and we'll all just touch each other. And no means no, no touching. Yes means yes, and maybe really does mean no. So don't push it, okay, people?
But, you know, in the experiments with monkeys and stuff, you know, there's a very famous one that maybe was done in the 50s.
I would cuddle any monkey. Anyway, go.
That a monkey was presented with two synthetic mothers. Do you know about this?
I think I've heard this.
One gave it all the food and nutrients that it would need, and the other one was warm and furry, and... The monkeys would always choose the one that was warm and furry to like snuggle with, and would only go to the other one to get the food and then go right back. So it really didn't matter about offering the monkey what it actually needs to survive. But I guess the argument could be made that it needs very much the contact of another monkey. You
That's
know? Close contact. Yeah.
So I think, you know what, there's I just doubt it. A cuddle party has never had a really maybe 10 really inappropriate situations. Like one of the things I read, they're like, don't go here looking to pick up. This is just, you know, for comfort and soul cleansing type activity. It's not like, don't be the guy who goes to, like, you know, the sex addiction meetings, look, trying to pick up girls with sex addiction problems, you know. This is something you go to. And you know these people, and they showed a picture of them, and, like, they're just...
Of the cuddle people?
Yeah, the cuddle people are just... They're nobody you'd want to cuddle with.
Well, they're people that can't find cuddling...
Right.
In normal circumstances, perhaps.
You like, know? Go to Craigslist, you look up cuddle groups, and I'm sure you'll find a few. But this... To me, is more out there than, like, the fairies, like the group, the, you know, the people who dress up in giant bear outfits. At least those people.
Philadelphia Fairy Con, a convention. It's a fairy convention. And by the way,
fairy or fairy? Because there's two different.
I'm saying fairy, like
fairies.
F-A-I, yeah, fairy. Okay. Like, you know,
he's talking about furries.
You're talking about furries.
Fairies,
oh,
like the anthropomorphics who like to dress up in giant bunny costumes.
Mascot. But one not weirder than the other, really. And for our fairy convention, there's the first day is Good Fairy Day.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second one is Evil Fairy Day.
There's bad, evil fairies.
There's bad fairies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
I did a whole thing on usefacts.com. I did a couple of the frequently asked questions for FairyCon. They're very...
Excellent.
Very interesting. So we are not... I would say we're anti-cuddle party. We're not pro-cuddle party.
Would you want to put an end to all cuddle parties, or you just don't want to attend?
I'd like to watch one. Like, you know, HBO Real Sex, where they just show... Like, you get all excited, like, ooh, real sex on HBO. They're going to show real people having sex. You watch 2 minutes of it, and it's like, you know, just horrible-looking people, like, having horrible-looking sex.
Yeah, that's... So, yeah, I wouldn't want to attend one, right? But I also wouldn't need to. So I think...
Oh, sorry, Russ.
No, but...
Sorry, you get all the cuddle when you need.
Cuddling.
Hey, listen, people. You may be hurting for some human contact, but Russ Stark has always gotten the cheek to press against when he needs it. That's how I roll. That's how I touch.
Okay, can I finish now?
Maybe.
Because what I'm saying is, look, if somebody is maybe not as attractive or whatever, and they have a hard time meeting people and stuff like that, if you think about that, that is a sucky way to go through life. Nobody touches you. You have no other contact.
Oh, you're right.
That sucks.
Yeah.
So, I, you know, good for them. If people are like, look, you don't have to, like,
you're making
sleep
me feel
with
bad
me
now.
Or anything like that.
Right.
I just would like some human contact, and I'm sure there's other people out there who feel the same way. So can we get together and cuddle?
All right. We are.
That's what it is.
All right.
I wonder if they have high five parties for the same reason.
I hope.
Now you make me feel bad about cutting down on cuddle parties. That's not any good.
But that should go on the band name list.
Cuddle party?
Cuddle party.
That's a good one. Speaking of, to tie in, you were talking about monkeys. I was reading stuff about, you know, I'm always interested in how, you know, basically where language comes, where people get language from. There's schools of thought. And they did a lot of studies on monkeys and apes about language acquisition. You know, is it inbred? Is it learned? Blah, blah, blah. But I love all the names they give to their monkey subjects. Like this one ape, they just called him Ape Sherman. His name was Ape Sherman. Maybe the greatest band name ever. So I always said, like, Ape Sherman needs to be followed by, like, Private Eye. You know what I mean? Like, Ape Sherman, Private Eye.
Did you put that on the
list? It's on the list, yeah. And it's just such a great name. And you read all the names, and you know, like, the scientists all have a bit of a sense of humor. Because they're like, listen, I'm going to be living with this stupid simian for 40 years trying to train it because they live forever. I'm not going to give them, like, a name like, you know, Flopsy. I'm going to give them a fun name that, you know, so out of all the names, like, I read, like, Ape Sherman was the best. So that's a great band name. Anyone wants to take it. So let's see. We got cuddle parties out of the way, people. And what better way to follow up a cuddle party, Russ, than with a song about a Greek goddess and dogs?
Yeah, this is the newly renamed band Los Dos Bros. And this is a song called Athena and the Dogs.
Trying to make things go his way. See, he works some wonder. And try to believe in something like love. Turn it up into the next century. Feeling fine. I guess he'd ask Athena, why do you look at me like I'm a work of wonder? She'd say, you can't flip a switch. Why do you look at me like I'm a work of wonder? You can't flip a switch, make mine action and say, We're not just slipping away. He made it a choice, just never get caught. He just works some wonder. Try to believe in something like love and turn it up into the next century. Feeling fine, I guess. Feeling
Los Dos Bros with Athena and the Dogs, and that is the band that was formerly known as Holiday and the Adventure Pop Collective, but then a few people left that band and it was down to two people. They decided to continue and change their name. Their new album is called Greek Gods in the West.
Rush, you just got a brand new computer.
Yes.
And
this is the first show recorded on the new Mac.
The new giant Mac. And I like that it is giant. It's 23-inch aluminum body, glass monitor, all one unit Mac.
24-inch.
24-inch, sorry. Yeah. That's pretty sweet looking.
I'm very pleased with it.
Yeah.
Although I do have to say, not in defense of PC, but, you know, it's not like Macs are bulletproof. I mean, this thing has hung up on me plenty of times. I've had to restart it. In the same way that you get that blue screen on the PC, which I will definitely admit is way more terrifying. You know, you get that little floating pinwheel of death on the Mac, and you got to restart. I mean, I've hit that.
But you can individually quit certain applications.
You can, but there have been more than a handful of times where things have gotten screwed up enough that I had to shut it off, man, like hold it down and make it shut off.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, computers are computers.
You're a heavy-duty
right?
user.
Well, that's part of it. But look, I won't go back. It's been great, you know.
Hey, I'm going to switch to beer talk really quick. We're drinking two different beers. We're drinking an old favorite, Flying Fish Brewing, Belgian-style Duvel, which I love. And you guys are drinking Saranac Pomegranate Wheat? What's that about?
Oh, and he's got the Special Dark.
Peter Staub's Special Dark. This is a lot of
this
fun
is
beer.
Okay. It's not very good.
No, it's, have it's, you had it before? Yeah, it's cheap dark beer.
That's kind of
it is.
I didn't offer it to you.
So what's the pomegranate wheat?
It doesn't taste very pomegranate-ish.
I don't think I've ever had a pomegranate.
You're welcome to take a sip.
I don't want to.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so that's Saranac pomegranate.
Saranac, all their beers are solid, I think.
Yeah, I always like a good Saranac.
You know, we talk and talk about beer, and they don't ever send us a case or anything. They don't send us a beer promotion deal.
Hey, my buddy's a beer guy, a home brewer, knows everything there is to know about beer. Want to do a beer show with him?
Yeah.
He's going to have he's going to give a little class at
we should do a tasting.
Yeah.
Tasting show.
He'll bring his beer. He's going to do something at God, I'm blanking out on the name of the brewery down in West Philly. I was just there a few weeks ago. Anyway, he's going to do a little something there, but his name's John, and he knows a lot about beer, so that'll be fun. We'll do a beer show.
Let's do it.
All right, guys, you know what we're going to do now? We are going to do one of our Day Trotter songs of the month, one of the selections we like to take from Day Trotter, our friends at Day Trotter. And, Todd, you found a good one.
Harvested.
I'd say stolen without their consent.
No, we do have their consent.
We certainly
do. We have forged a relationship with these guys, and this one is Fleet Foxes bringing us White Winter Hymnal.
I was following the eye, 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 was following the pack, all swallowed in their coats, with scarves of red tied round their throats to keep their little heads from falling in the snow. And I turn round and there you go, and Michael, you would fall and turn the white snow red as strawberries. Scarves of red tied round their throats to keep their little heads from falling in the snow. And I turn round and there you go, and Michael, you would fall and turn the white snow red as strawberries in summertime.
You know what we're gonna do now, Todd? You, who always scores amazing interviews with amazingly interesting people in the world of pop culture, comedy, and music, decided to say, hey, why don't I interview a legend of the art world, correct?
And he sure is.
This is Todd Marone reporting for Used Wigs Radio, and it is my tremendous honor and pleasure to be sitting today with one of artists' living legends, Mr. Frank Stella. Thank you so much, Frank.
Thank you.
You know, as an artist myself and as an art instructor, looking at your career, which has spanned over half a century, when I look at your work, especially chronologically, it seems to me that it seems like you are adding or introducing elements of design, being line and value and color and then shape and texture and then form, almost like a snowball rolling down a hill, adding more and more elements to your work from very early in your career to current day. Is that something that you've done purposely or mindfully, or just happens to be grabbing from a bag of tricks and adding to that?
I don't know, but what you described, I suppose, is you could describe it the other way around. I could have started out in a very complicated way and ended up as I started out with very simple, black paintings. But that the way it happened is the way it happened. But I think that was because at the time I was interested in, as were many others, it was the pressure of abstraction, you know, as a new idea, as a new thing. Abstract art just seemed very compelling, mm-hmm. and I found a way of making it largely through relatively simple, repetitive geometric shapes. But they were painted in a very straightforward, or you could say flat-footed way, but they weren't basically what you would normally call a geometric painting. They were, in fact, another kind of painting. They were actually far closer to something like Rothko and Barnett Newman than they would have been to somebody like Leon Polk Smith or some other kind of abstract artist.
And I find it interesting that you refer to it as abstract, as many people do. Do you see a distinction between abstract and non-representational? Because abstract would suggest to me that something is being abstracted. So do
yes, I know you're probably more correct. But the tradition still, you have to, you really wouldn't call Kandinsky at his kind of breakthrough with Malevich and Mondrian as non-representational. Doesn't seem good enough or interesting enough uh-huh. as abstract art.
Right. But, it seems almost negative to say.
yes. So I think. But anyway, for me, I accept it as abstract art, and non-representational art is a little doesn't take too many syllables or.
right. It's not as stylish, perhaps. I wonder, and of course you mentioned yourself, Barnett Newman and Jasper Johns were great influences on you and mm-hmm. contemporaries of yours. But are you ever, or do you ever find yourself influenced by peoples who, perhaps visual artists whose work aren't anything like yours, or even different genres such as music or film or poetry or literature?
Well, I mean, I've mined or stolen from, say, literature and music for titles. But I wouldn't, I really am not directly influenced. I mean, I might be inspired by it, but mm-hmm. not influenced by it. But as far as being influenced, I mean, I'm certainly influenced by a lot of things that I see. And one of the things that you might not think of, but for a long time, you know, I was very taken with John Chamberlain's work, you know, when we were together in the 60s and everything. And it didn't show up until 20 years later in my work. You know, but uh-huh. I mean, I guess it was inevitable since I liked it so much.
In the way perhaps it planted subconscious seeds that eventually...
Yeah, and I just liked it, and I wasn't ready to either think that way or work that way. I had other things that I was more interested in at the uh-huh. time, and maybe I got to it later on, or it became more natural to me.
And you mentioned the 60s. I mean, you've been a major player in the art world, and specifically in New York City, since mm-hmm. then and to right up until current day. How has the scene changed in New York City? I mean, was it still considered?
Well, it has. It's changed a lot. When I first came to New York City, someone told me, maybe it was my accountant or something, that there were 30,000 artists in New York City. That's when they're filing their taxes. And you'd have to say that now, you know, but there are 300,000, if we ask the accountants, uh-huh. again, people who are artists in New York City. And I think that, you know, it simply increased. But I think the problem is, and this is, you know, I don't blame anyone, and I don't even blame myself for saying it, but the art world is so structured in such a way that it's inevitably like a pyramid, and all that anyone cares, no matter how broad the base of the pyramid is, the result at the end is very small. So there's not a lot of room at the top of the pyramid, no matter how you configure the pyramid.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the problem. I mean, a lot of people can enjoy making art, a lot of people can do this, that, or the other, but the art world still wants, in some way, to deal only with the top of the pyramid.
And do you think that's because for the visual arts, unlike music and unlike the written word or the published word, you need a single piece to appeal to someone who's going to invest a tremendous amount of money, as opposed to a CD or a book in which we need a tremendous number of pieces appealing, you know, to a much smaller investment, to a greater number of people?
Well, I think there's some truth in that. But it's tricky because The paintings, when they start out, I mean, they're certainly more than a CD or something, but by and large, all successful art dealing and everything begins with a price that's available at least to middle-class people and everything. And I think, you know, the exhibition, the institutional exhibition policy is to always to show young art or new art being made. So it's there and it's available, and it might be beyond a lot of people's budgets, but there are always reproductions of it and it's always available. But there's no question that it doesn't have a broad market. It's a specialized market, and even though people are terribly excited by how much money is involved and how expensive it is and how successful the auction houses seem to be, it's still, compared to what happened on Wall Street yesterday and the day before, it's still peanuts.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's a very, you know, the art market is a very shallow market.
Mm-hmm.
And I only mean that. You can take that any way you want.
Gotcha. And speaking of young artists, mm-hmm. if you had the ability to write a letter or put a couple words down of advice mm-hmm. and mail it back 50 years ago to a young Frank Stella, what might you tell yourself?
Well, I don't know what I would tell anybody, but I mean, I would simply be encouraging. I mean, all that my teachers were good, and I really enjoyed it, and they in a way taught me a lot. But more than anything, all they were simply accepting and encouraging. You know, the opposite of what your parents usually are.
Okay.
And so that makes for a good teacher and a sympathetic friend.
Uh-huh. And the last thing I wanted to talk to you about, I know you've been very active and very vocal against the proposed orphan law that our country is attempting to push through.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that a lot of our listeners are unaware of that and the repercussions of that to the art community and the community, you know, beyond, and the consumers of visual art as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I think it's a problem because it allows people to take to basically subvert the copyright law. And the copyright law has never actually been that strong in support of the artist, but nonetheless it will. It simply means that somebody can say they couldn't get a hold of the owner of one of my paintings, so therefore, since they tried and they couldn't get a hold of it, they would be free to make as many T-shirts or toilet seat covers as they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's it.
I mean,
it's a simple marketing problem.
And what could a listener or a supporter of you or someone who would feel strongly against that, what can they do? Is it just a matter of writing to or talking to their local politicians?
Yes, it's a political issue, a very straightforward one. But you know, like all of these issues, it's very hard to find out when it actually comes up or when it'll come to a vote or which how it'll appear in Congress.
Uh-huh. And you think it's a case of a government trying to push artists into spending money to get their work copyrighted?
No, because we don't have to spend anything. Our work is automatically copyrighted.
Mm-hmm.
So it is copyrighted. It's just a question of loosening the copyright laws to make it easier for lower-level marketing to use imagery.
Right.
And I'm against it. You know, to tell you the truth, you could argue that maybe, you know, I could benefit, you know, if I had a lot of... a lot more T-shirts or on underwear or, you know, I mean,
right.
Q-tops.
The Keith Haring model where you'd have skateboards
and
T-shirts.
But, you know, I'm happy really, honestly, not to see that. I don't.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your illustrious career up until now. We're thrilled to have a few pieces in Philadelphia as part of this collection. So thanks so much for chatting with us, and
okay,
I appreciate
you.
It.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Set the world on fire and watch it end.
Back. That was Todd's interview with Frank Stella, quickly followed by a great song by the band The Standard. That was Sunday Eyes from their fabulous album The Swimmers, their Portland, Oregon band on Partisan Records. And you can check them out at www.thestandardsite.com. Todd, great interview with he was a little older gentleman. I mean,
well, he probably, the way I figure, is about 75. But, you know, very vivacious and sharp and healthy. As a matter of fact, his work now is the most, at least physically, the most ambitious stuff he's done. It's large, three-dimensional, in many ways architectural.
Mm-hmm.
A spry 75.
I like that he really did not give a crap about what podcasting or we were
yeah.
about. He was
yeah.
a no.
No.
I'm a legend. I know nothing about this new technology, and I don't need some punk to tell me about it.
Prior to the interview, I tried to explain to him what Usewigs Radio was.
Right.
And I was like, and I said, oh, well, you know, we're a Philadelphia-based podcast. I said, do you know what podcasting is? And he, not only did he say no, it was like, it was the kind of no that someone gives you when it's no to that question and every other question you're about to ask me.
You know,
it was like wiping his hand away, like, no, I don't need to know. I don't want to know about that.
It's interesting because 52 shows into it, Jeff doesn't really know what podcasting is either.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he hasn't turned off the sound on his email. It's been ringing the whole time. I don't think he really realizes that we have microphones on that pick that kind of stuff up. But, you know.
I got chastised, ladies and gentlemen. You know what? I'm going to hit mute on this little button. These are just people like coming in with questions, and they're just like, what, Frank Stella? We were promised Frank Stallone.
The email lines are lighting up.
No, people. Frank Stallone is not going to be interviewed on this show. That's next show, and his art is also very good. But Frank Stella, like we said, legend in the art world, minimalist from the 50s, 60s, hung out with all the cool artists of the day, and really, I said, Todd, that I really enjoyed. I remember reading about, you know, that era a while back. And, you know, every great artist has their great quotes. And Frank Stella, I believe, just said something that struck me as, you know, most abstract expressionists, people like that, they're like, no, this work may just seem like it's a bunch of lines, or these drips may seem like they're just drips on a painting, but what it really is, or is a representation of this. Where Frank Stella took the exact opposite and said, you know, basically what I just did was it's art, it's a flat surface with paint on it, nothing more. And that always struck me as like, wow, that's what he was going for. That's what he did. And he wasn't trying to, you know.
That's minimalism.
That's minimalism.
The work is minimal. The explanation is minimal.
It's also confidence, right? Because I think a lot of people, they get into a situation where they wouldn't want suddenly the tide to turn. Everybody go like, oh, yeah, you know, my five-year-old really could paint that. And so who cares, right? I think it's people trying to protect their livelihood and their place in the artistic community by by pretending that other people could not do it, or can't even, and I'm not saying that everybody could, but can't even get in that headspace.
But there's something really sincere and beautiful about the simplicity of it. You know, I
mean, yeah.
I don't know that it makes it less important if it doesn't stand for or mean something else. You know, like that famous Freud quote, well, no, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, you know?
Yeah, I'm saying that I like what he's saying. I'm saying that people who do the opposite and they try to blow everything. Look, sometimes there is deep symbolism behind stuff, and that's fine. But
yeah, Frank Stella has the confidence to say that.
Well, I think he had to say it at that point because there were so many people. When that kind of, you know, his sort of minimalist art and, like, color field, you know, that kind of art where you're like, wow, it's four different colors, geometric, next to each other. What's the deal? You know, a lot of those people were initially saying, well, no, you don't understand. The reason it's the symbiosis between this, and he was just like, he's pretty much a no-bullshit guy, you know? So I like that, you know, he could come out and make a statement like that, and then other people could follow and, you know, rest on that statement with their art, too. So, you know.
But now this stuff is referred to as maximumism.
Oh, that's interesting. And why do you say that?
Because, and you heard me say it in the interview, when he first started, when he set up, his work was just about line.
Mm-hmm.
And then as he went on, it's almost like he began to inject additional, as you heard me say, additional elements. You know,
right.
So then value, and then color, and then shape, and then form, and then texture. And now his stuff, it just has all of the elements happening. Like I said, it's just really massive stuff that's both flat and three-dimensional, that it surrounds you in many cases. It's tremendously rich texture. So he had just kind of, he's continuously added things. It's still non-representational,
yeah,
but it's major.
So, to continue, speaking of cool interviews, you also had an interview recently.
And speaking
of
Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
The Dandy Warhols. I caught up with the guitarist of the Dandy Warhols and founding member, Peter Holmstrom. And these are two pretty legitimate interviews. And listeners probably know, in the past, I wave a tape recorder, a large Sony, you know, 4-pound tape recorder where you have to press the buttons simultaneously to record. And I felt, especially with Frank Stella, although he probably wouldn't have even noticed that wasn't cutting-edge technology, perhaps.
Well, it probably was cutting-edge technology.
Yeah, well, his reaction to podcasting. But anyway, I figured I'm not going to bring this archaic, this relic thing and wave it in his face. So I borrowed from Jeff. Jeff was nice enough to lend me an MP3 or digital recorder, which mm-hmm. looks like a taser, by the way. And
it does kind of look like a taser.
Yeah, very alarmingly so, if it doesn't have the little fuzzy thing on the end, right? So anyway, so I borrow it from him. I don't know how to use it really well, but it certainly seemed more legitimate. So I use it for Frank Stella and went off without a hitch. But in the next interview, the Dandy Warhols interview, which was a major score, you'll notice a very abrupt ending to this interview, perhaps 3.5 minutes in. And it's unfortunate because Peter was a tremendously interesting guy. And had plenty to say, which you will not hear, because what I found out later was was that I ran out of space on the memory card.
Stupid memory card.
And I didn't know at the time what had happened. All I know is, like, typically when you turn that thing off, it says, which I love, goodbye, comma, see you, which, you know, it makes no sense. But anyway, this time, instead of exchanging pleasantries, it said, turn down or turn off or shut down unit immediately. You know, and I felt like that was not the relationship that we had before. And I got really upset. And then when I got home, I realized it's because it ran out of space.
Yeah, well, that is a great little recorder, so I'm going to have to hit you with two words. User error.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was my fault. I didn't tell you that the card was half full.
Well, either way, what we have is worth listening to, so we'll play that.
Yeah.
And then we'll play a little Dandy Warhols after that. And then continue.
Yeah, so this is the beginning of an interview with Peter Holmstrom of the Dandy Warhols.
Thanks so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, no problem.
What immediately comes to mind as actually I'm an art guy and certainly a Pennsylvania guy, Philadelphia, is the nod to Andy Warhol, you know, Pennsylvania pop icon.
Right, absolutely.
Are the visual arts a big part of your life or the band member's life, or was it just kind of something that sounded interesting together to you?
I guess it's, I mean, it was important. I studied art. I was going to be an artist, you know, uh-huh. until music took over my life.
Okay.
So, I mean, absolutely.
So it was either that or Joy Lichtenstein or something could have been.
Yeah, or Unanimous Bosch.
Oh, nice. Excellent. Does the visual art or do visual images inspire you to make music?
At this point, I'm not sure what doesn't inspire you to create. Because, I mean, there's never an intention of let's go create this, like something. It's always just sort of you kind of open yourself up and let whatever come out. Or you channel something or whatever, however you see it. I'm never quite sure. And I'm fascinated by that because I've talked to a number of different musicians and read interviews, you know, with others that have the same opinion, you know, feeling that they don't actually write, they sort of channel. And I don't know where, I mean, it's like the best stuff I come up with is stuff that I'm not consciously thinking about. Like, what do I play next? You know, I'm not thinking that. I'm just sort of, you let go and something happens. It's pretty cool.
Excellent. So less contrived, collective, kind of subconscious sometimes.
Yeah, I think so.
And speaking of other forms of art, obviously, Welcome to the Monkey House seems to be a nod to Kurt Vonnegut. Are you guys big Kurt Vonnegut fans? Or is
yeah,
it-
that's that probably more than anything is what inspires us because we all read a lot and always have. I grew up without a television.
And oh, wow.
So reading is what I do as entertainment, you know. It's like, I can watch TV, but since I grew up without it, it takes over, and I can't really relax or anything. It's just, like, too intense.
And ironically enough, you guys have been featured on lots of different TV shows, both here in the States and abroad, mm-hmm. And that brought you a certain level of commercial fame, and literally commercial fame, being featured in television commercials as well, right?
Which then allowed us to be independent.
Now. Yeah. And then you got to make a lot of money to sing the blues or something like that, right? Are there projects, are there video games, are there TV shows, are there movies that you would love to have your music featured in?
Well, I think the iPod commercial is kind of the dream gig, isn't it?
That's quite a score, right?
It seems like it, because it's like they're always like really visually like captivating, and it features the music as much as whatever the visual is.
Yeah.
So.
And my understanding is they don't get paid a cent. The artist, the musical artist, doesn't get paid for that, but they supposedly make it up and then some.
I'm
you know,
sure they do.
With the exposure. Sweet to the soul, I intend.
And that was about 30% of my interview with Peter Holmstrom of the Dandy Warhols. He went on to talk about the auditorium, which is really interesting. They actually own like a block in Portland, Oregon, where they do all of their recording and merchandising and everything Dandy Warhol related.
So they took all the good money they made and invested it in...
And they made it commercially, literally commercial, like in commercials and also on some TV shows, one of which you love.
Well, that song we just played was called We Used to Be Friends by the Dandy Warhols, mm-hmm. and you two have no idea where that song is, but there was a great song, which I loved, about a spunky little teen detective named Veronica Mars, and that was her theme song.
Oh, yeah. So that was the theme song? That was what opened the show?
That's opened the show.
Wow.
So you saw, when you hear that song, the Pavlovian response of me drinking a beer, not looking so happy, to me drinking a beer, kind of, I was dancing a little bit, and I was just kind of swaying back and forth.
So he turns into sad, drunk,
used to be friends. And then I'm like thinking of like all the cast members, like, wah-wah-wah-wah-wah, oh, there's Weevil, wah-wah-wah-wah.
There's Raj in Rerun.
Rerun.
The whole gang.
Wah-wah-wah-wah. Rerun, are you tape recording a Doobie Brothers concert? Bad move. Boy, that was a tangent. That was a great song. And the Dandy Warhols, also people might know, and I know you didn't touch on this, which was cool, but there's a very, very cool movie called Dig, D-I, I think G-G with an exclamation point, or D-I-G.
I think it's capital D, lowercase I, capital G.
Oh, with an exclamation point.
Yeah. But it was... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was a really good documentary of two bands that kind of were friends, who used to be friends, might have been what the song, probably what the song's about, and they're falling out in a very public manner on this documentary.
I figured that a lot of people know the Dandy Warhols
right.
because of that documentary, so I didn't want to talk about it because I'm sure they've been
right.
bombarded.
That's like interview 101 for pikers, Todd. You knew what to do. And we're in the home stretch right here, guys. We are wrapping up. And as we like to do, we like to wrap up with a couple of fan favorites. I'm going to bring back an old one to start off our wrap-up with. This is a little segment we like to call, I Don't Like You, and I Don't Need a Reason Why. Keira Knightley. Keira, wipe that smug off your face. Your skinny, stupid face. Russ doesn't know who Keira Knightley is.
He didn't even smug look. He didn't. No. He's going to wipe the smug off her face.
Wipe the smug
don't
off
like her.
Face.
That's all. Just yeah. simple as that.
Okay.
All right. I'm not going to give you a reason why. Guys, let's do a little YouTube talk. What we're watching on YouTube. And I know we have some great stuff. Russ, give me some YouTube.
I have two of them. One you should go look up is called Santana Shreds.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically this guitarist. And he's a phenomenal guitarist. But he goes in and he takes these videos of... People like Santana. The Santana was great. Play like these concert pieces of concert footage, and he overdubs all this really wanky guitar playing over the top of it, and he matches the playing to what they're doing on screen, so it looks like that's what they're doing.
But it's bad guitar.
It's bad guitar, but like funny bad guitar. So it's all
over
this,
the top,
like, really over the top, like avant-garde playing, and as they're doing things, you just hear like four people in the crowd, like this, like a beat crowd going like, yeah, and it's all this really
noodling
weird stuff.
And, okay.
And every time you see the drummer, you hear like really bad drumming that matches what he's doing, and then as soon as he's off screen, it goes away. It's really, really funny. So Santana Shreds is great, and there's another one in that vein too. Look for there's one called Birthday Greetings from Joe Cocker.
Yeah,
and it's basically. Somebody went and did like a closed caption version of his performance at Woodstock, and it's pretty funny. It's you know, it's fairly predictable, but it's good for a few laughs, so that's worth checking out too.
Excellent. Todd Lee Von Toddersons, what are you watching on the YouTube?
I'd like you just to type in the words ladder fall. And
I think I know what you're
wrong,
getting at.
But the first two videos that you're gonna find are two QVC or Home Shopping Network blunders. One looks like it's from 83.
Yeah.
One more recently. And they're both, you know, obviously somebody falls off a ladder in both of them, but check them out.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin the ending, but you'll
let
definitely
me guess.
Enjoy it.
It's cocksure human plus unstable ladder
okay.
equals hilarity.
Yes, you've yeah, seen it before
yeah.
then.
Yeah, I love it. And it's one of those things where you're just like, you know what's going to happen, and you get giddy knowing. Like, you're just like,
<true. laughs>
like, this guy's just yapping away, like, you know, I'm on this little giant ladder, and I'm about 14 feet up, but we can go another 16 feet if we... Oh, my... Then the uncomfortable silence, and it's like...
It's great.
And then you hear, like, I don't think that was supposed to happen. Is he all right? I'm okay.
They're so good. If there was a station that 24 hours a day sold ladders, you'd probably watch it just waiting for the boss.
Just have a one YouTube thing, and I mentioned it on Newswigs in a post a while back. Just type in, I believe it's Springsteen Rehearses Dancing, and you would swear to God it's a Ben Stiller parody of him dressed up as Bruce or some like Eastern European Bruce impersonator doing the dance moves to Dancing in the Dark. Like when Bruce went on that tour, like, you know, Dancing in the Dark, and you saw that stupid video of him with Courtney Cox, that whole uncomfortable, awkward dancing he's doing, he spent weeks rehearsing it. Like, he's that bad of a dancer. And there's a video that shows him rehearsing, and he's wearing, like, you know, rerun suspenders and, like, you know, balloon pants. And it's just, and as much as everyone loves Bruce, you know what I mean? Everyone has their period in life where they just do real embarrassing crap, and Bruce certainly did do that. So enjoy Bruce Springsteen rehearsing dancing. Okay, guys, right now I believe we're going to wrap up the show. I know we don't want to because you know the next time you hear the show, it will be in Russian with Sergei, Anatoly, and Sasha. But we will we'll get the shout-outs right now with some shouts from the guys. Russ?
I'm going to shout out a band that we played once before, and we did a review on them as well, a band called Half Acre Day.
Love them.
Great, great, great band. Really good guys. They are re-releasing their first album, which is called Primo de la Rocket Suit. fantastic album. Pretty much everything those guys have done, I'm a big fan of. So that is available again now on CD. So go out and check that out.
What does it mean to re-release an album nowadays? I mean, hasn't it been continuously available?
Is it remastered?
It's like,
or
it's like Disney collection of movies where they retire it?
Well, no, you know what? A lot of little bands, like bands and small indie labels, like, you know, you do print runs, and after 5,000 or 10,000 of your albums are gone,
so
they're gone.
It was
available digitally, but it's back out there physically again now, which doesn't matter to guys like me, because I was listening to it digitally the whole time, but it's nice to have it back out there in circulation. And it's just another thing to call them out and say check them out, because they're a great band.
There you go, Todd. So stop asking such questions, like, just to try to quash somebody's great shout-out. All right, Todd, why don't you give us a shout-out? Maybe we can jump all over you.
Okay, you ready?
All right.
My shout-out actually has an interview segment.
What?
I'm shouting out the Philadelphia Fringe Festival.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Fringe. Now, I know the listeners are thinking, but Todd,
that happened
the
months ago.
The Fringe Festival's over. But listeners, it's an annual event.
What kind of listeners? So, butt listeners?
Butt listeners.
That was just the way you said it. Attention, butt listeners.
However, listeners, that is an annual event. So certainly keep your eyes and ears peeled for next fall's Fringe Festival here in Philadelphia. And I believe they also do it in Los Angeles. And I know Russ, I think, caught a couple shows. I caught three. And here's a smidget of my conversation with director and writer of one that got a lot of press, Wawapalooza 2, Get Shorty.
If someone were to stumble in who lived in a different country or even a different state, would they get it? Or is it a lot of inside jokes for just people local to the area?
No, I think they would get it. Like the Eagles sketch last year. Football fanaticism exists everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The driving. There's road rage everywhere. There's just some little tiny references to South Jersey, but I thought that would be fun because it is a local crowd, and you know, you go to so many movies with Brad Pitt about some, you know, far off place, and you just never hear about where you live. So to write local, to me is fun for the audience to hear little references, but the theme should be, I feel, are beyond that. And again, they don't really pass muster with the cast or get approved when I put them out there unless there's things we all have in common.
Right.
So if that helps resonate. But I think also that Jersey is just funny. I mean, it's a culture that other people, it's got a reputation, it is funny. Although we've never tried doing this anywhere else.
Very nice, Todd. Very nice. We'll remember that shout for 10 months. We'll file that so when the Fringe Festival comes back.
They're re-releasing it.
Oh, okay. They're re-releasing it. Very nice. I have just a couple of quick shouts. You know, when you just keep listening to a band over and over and you just want to extol their virtues, how great. The Editors, English band, fantastic. Just go type in The Editors to eMusic or Amazon or wherever and just listen to them. They're just so freaking good. good. I discovered a new show also on the BBC called Gavin and Stacey. And if you have Comcast On Demand where you can go look at shows on demand, just check out BBC. Gavin and Stacey are on there. I think they did one season, 6 episodes. They're doing another season of 6 episodes. It's just kind of about 2 20-something young kids who meet, fall in love, and all that. And it's pretty raunchy, but it has a great British sense of humor. You know, if you dig The Office, you dig Extras, Little Britain, all that stuff. The joy of it is it's really, really funny, and you wish it had subtitles because you know you're missing a third of the great jokes.
Yeah.
And every now and then you hear a funny word. You're like, I know, that's a British word that means really ugly girl. And then you just throw in some really just really touching stuff on top of really raunchy.
You get better at watching British
you do.
Shows, though. Like, after you see maybe 2 or 3 episodes.
That's so true.
A couple nights in a row or consecutively, yeah.
Well,
you get your chops.
You
do. Your British ear chops.
My wife and I were very into MI5, the series, and we would watch with subtitles. And now, after probably 20 episodes, we're feeling pretty confident we don't need subtitles anymore.
For people that speak English.
For people that speak English. And lastly, shout out to another Day Trotter shout out. We don't play this. We didn't play this band Centromatic on the show because they're really, really kind of alt country depression music, but it's really soul wrenching, great alt country music. So check out Centromatic's latest session on Day Trotter. It's great. And lastly, to my lovely cousin Kathleen and her husband Dave, congratulations on being married. I love you guys very much, and they're also listeners. So
very nice.
There you go. Great show, guys. Great last American broadcast of the podcast. Next time, it'll be all about Glasnost and Pravda and vodka and all that good Russian stuff.